This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 607 with the dudes from HomeTech.fm, recorded on May 9th, 2024. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, sometimes outside of your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation all through the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a not-so-stormy Bellevue, Nebraska. We spent kind of a little bit of the pre-show talking about the various forms of weather. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you are safe and in a good spot from weather. I think we're in, no matter where you live in the United States, you're in for, and maybe even Canada too. We'll bring Canada in, make that acceptable. You might be in for some interesting weather. Of course, we'll post the show with world-class show notes out at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers keeping things going every single month. If you want to join the team on that, head out to theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And of course, big thanks to Christian Johnson, who joined us last week. Fun show catching up with him and all the things that he's doing over there at Maple Grove Partners. And so, Christian, thanks for coming on. I've got the guys from HomeTech.fm on tonight. I've got them all in the same place at the same time. It's not dangerous because they're in different locations. Don't worry about it. They're all safe. But gentlemen, Gavin, TJ, and Seth, welcome to Home Gadget Geeks. Good to have you here.
Yeah, good to be here.
Great to be here.
Seth, we haven't met you. We know Gavin really well. TJ's been on as well. First time for you. Tell us a little bit for listeners as they're meeting you for the first time. Just give us, you know, kind of where you're from and tell, you know, a little, maybe just a smidge about your story of home tech and how you got there and what you do there and your role on the show.
How did I get here?
Yeah. How did that work?
Just started thinking about it. It's been a journey, I guess. Let's see. I started off kind of in an early career doing installs. I kind of had a networking background. I did some computer work out of high school and through college, and then kind of landed into like this weird home audio market, I guess, where people were building homes and they were like, yeah, we want speakers in here and we want a central vac. You know, that was the big thing.
Yeah.
And we would go out and drill holes and install things and install wires and punch down Cat 5. And that's kind of where I started. I went all the way through that kind of thing where I was installing, designing, all the way up to sales, and kind of moved out of that into kind of a role with a distributor doing programming. So I'm kind of doing more programming these days and support for dealers out, or the professional installers out in the field that were doing the job I used to have. So that's kind of what I'm doing. A couple of years back, I was listening to, I don't know, I was listening to some podcasts, some of the very popular podcasts that are out there, and listening to some interesting takes on what the home automation market was doing. And I was like, you know, there's got to be something, there's got to be a podcast out there that's like some pro integrators that have dealt with all this stuff before. Cause there was nothing new about Nest. There was nothing new about, these new products that were coming to market, and it was kind of, everything was coming on board, and we were seeing Staples Connect and all these different hubs come out. Well, I teamed up with Jason Griffin. We came out with Home Tech. I don't know. Within a month, we were recording our first episode and just like, let's get it out there. Let's get started. Mm-hmm. And we've been recording quite a bit since then. We've been recording, what are we up to, 480, 41? I should be editing a show tonight. Yeah, 41.
Well, thank you for taking a night off. And...
No, it's all right. It'll be next week sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah,
What you guys show your weekly, do you miss weeks? Are there times when you say not this week, or we don't have enough people, or is it every week regardless?
It's only been a couple of times, I think, in the past like year or so at least.
Yeah. I would say it's usually we try and hit every week. I know it bounces around holidays and that kind of thing where, we won't record or anything, but for the most part we try and catch up every week, see what we're doing, go over some of the things that have happened in the news. There used to be a lot more in the news around home automation.
Why do you think there's less?
There's less companies being acquired by $3 billion from Google.
Yeah.
So once that Amazon money dries up.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Amazon.
Yeah.
Seth, I've heard that you're the most thorough, get the project finished every time person on the program. Is that true? You're always getting your projects done, Seth?
I noticed that Gavin had sent over some suggested topics, and I saw that was mentioned.
I feel like we need to help you, and this is a perfect forum for this.
Wow.
I'm in the same place. Is that what it is? Yeah.
Nobody's listening. Don't worry. No one's listening. No one's watching. This is a safe place. Just
yeah. Okay. Yeah, we won't hassle. Well, not much anyways. We won't. One of my previous hosts, Mike Wieger, he was the opposite. He would start projects, finish them, and sell them within a week.
That's amazing.
So he'd come on the show and he'd be like, yeah, I got this thing and I'm doing this new thing. And then I bring him back next week for an update. You know, hey, Mike, what do we do? He was on every week with me. He's like, oh, yeah, I already sold it. I was like, what? Wow. He's like, yeah, it just didn't. I didn't want to deal with it. So he was pretty fast. Pretty fast guy. So I think some of your folks are out here listening. So we have Dot Morton, who says, I'm so used to listening to these voices without pictures. It's sort of weird to have faces attached to the voices. Now, do you guys, so you record on video, but it's audio only then? Do you release a video version of what you guys do at hometech.fm?
Typically, no. We meet, we use Zoom to meet up and chat for the back end audio, but everything is recorded locally, and then we compile that and put it into the old fashioned podcast format. And
just,
I guess,
audio.
Yeah, YouTube has like a thing now where it can bring that in as the podcast feed as a thing. So it's been posting to YouTube. I don't know. We tried using StreamYard at the beginning. We may come back and use something similar. Or StreamYard again in the future. I don't know. We'll see. The video workflow is a lot harder than audio.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Unless you go, I mean, I don't do any edits. So we literally, I mean, a few, cut off the pre-show, cut off the post stuff. If there's something, you know, if we had a problem in the middle of it, you can kind of edit it. But most of the time, I don't do any of the sort. So TJ says he's in chat as well. And he says it's always a weird feeling seeing voices, faces for the first time. You know, as you listen to podcasts, you make up your own face for these people, right? Right. And then you see them for the first time and you're like, oh, that's not at all.
Disappointing.
Yeah. I've done that for a lot of people I've listened to for like several years. And I finally looked up their face and I was like, that is not what I was expecting at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most recent one, I think, for me was there's one guy that does it for Unraid called Space Invader One. Mm. He totally did not match the voice that I thought he was, you know, like
he does not match his voice at all.
Yeah.
He's got some great videos. His content is just
awesome.
Spot on. Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is weird. He also says it's the equivalent of, oh, you're taller in real life than I thought.
So that actually happened with Gavin and I, because the first time I met Gavin in real life, I didn't realize that dude is like 8 foot tall. Did you know that? He is so tall.
He's a big guy.
And I saw him walking towards me and I was like, what the heck? Because he sits in his chair like this and you're not expecting him to be that tall.
I'm just 6'2". It's not 8. 6'2".
Yeah, it's close.
TJ, how tall are you then?
I don't even know, honestly. I make it up every time. Every time I have to get my license renewed, I make it up.
Right.
So I've been 5'10". I've been 5'8". They never check. So, I mean, I can be whatever I want.
Less than one Gavin is what we say.
That's right.
It's like stones, you know, the British measurement.
Oh, man.
One Gavin, two
Gavin.
Another
two Gavin. That's
yeah.
He's a tall guy.
Brian says, I listen to Home Tech each week. And fun to have you all on Home Gadget Geeks all at the same time. So
awesome.
Fun for me as well. Well, let's dig into some content a little bit. TJ, we'll get started with you. And talking about some maybe a lighting experience that you've had. No, wait a minute. You said you've got something being built too. Can I say that? Is that public? Did I mess up something?
I mean, I've been posting pictures online. So.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it's whatever at this point.
How fun, I mean, are you getting to take all this stuff that you talk about all the time and put it in the new house?
Yeah, so that's what's been kind of nice, and I've kind of went overboard in a way, but I'm slowly refining and getting it there. But I've been, you know, professional home automation person, I guess AV would be the technical term, for the past like 10 years now. And so I've been doing this stuff in people's houses and installing, you know, smart switches and thermostats and all this stuff. But I've never been able to fully do it in my own house. And so mm-hmm. when we got the house, I went out and I automated all the switches and, you know, I put, you know, the TVs on the wall and, you know, everything you do with a house, but I was able to do it myself. And so that's been fun. And, you know, we've been upgrading the house and doing different things to it. And I try to do as much as I can. I find, you know, the tear out and the demolition to be like the best way to save money for this kind of stuff is mm-hmm. like, I'll just tear everything apart and pay somebody else to come in and put it back together.
Yeah. So. Do you find, TJ, like, would you rather build new and put the home automation in that way, or would you rather retro it into an older home, have the character of an older home, but retro some of that home automation in?
I for me personally, I think I would just go with the older home. I don't, the new home is nice, but I don't think it's necessary for home automation in general. I think you can do that in any house. So, for me, I like a little house, or a house with a little bit of character. So I would definitely choose the older one.
Yeah. Seth, what about you? You've do that as well. You've done those installs. Oh, yeah. Prefer new or retro?
A little of both. I what I really like is hiding things. I like hiding the technology. I don't like to see it. I don't like to see wall clutter. I don't like to see anything. Like if you see I want to see the TV, a soundbar or something below it, and I don't even want to see the audio system. I don't want to know it exists. So like my goal would be one of these rooms that is out there with the TV and it just sounds amazing. And you don't see any of the technology. It's just built into the room. It's part of the room and it works. That's always been my goal.
The hardest part, though, of that, this is where I get frustrated, is I think it takes the longest to hide everything. I mean, you got to think about the design and where you're going to put things and how wires, what they're going to go behind. If you think, and I lose my patience. I kind of just, like, I get in, I just want to be done. Like, the second I start, I'm like, why is this not done already? Mm-hmm. How do you, if you want them all hidden, how do you get to that point where it's worth spending all that time to get it hidden?
Tricks of the trade, I guess. It's a lot of experience and kind of knowing what products to aim for and look at. Especially as an integrator, and just, I mean, I remember just like flipping over catalogs when we had those and just like pouring through tiny little, you know, accessory products to see what each one of them were and how they matched up with the main product. I'm like, oh, I can put this with this and make it, you know, hide this away. And a lot of forum work, really, back in the day was just talking to other integrators and seeing how they were doing it. And then, or seeing somebody in a magazine and reaching out, and just, sometimes you know them and find out who they are and talk to them. How'd you do that? You know, how did that work? And picking up all those little tips and tricks really over the years, just it's kind of a learned experience thing. So I think that's probably the biggest thing a custom integrator person could bring to the table for you, other than not having to do the work yourself. Said, like, that type of install is pretty inflexible, right? Like you can't, you're not running a wire across the floor, across down the wall from the TV or anything. So anytime you want to go change something out, like if there's a new HDMI cable, well, the TV's coming down, the soundbar is coming down, you're going to have to retro that cable down the wall, put it all back together. So it's a lot more work sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of zip ties,
Velcro. Oh, yeah.
My TV installs at home look clean. Just don't look behind them. Behind them is a mess.
You just pull all the cables up and then just zip tie them.
That's all you can do. I mean, you can organize them and stuff, but as soon as you like need to like access them or anything, the organization of the wires usually makes it worse at that time.
Yep.
And so like it's funny, we get people that are like, I want the wires on the back to look nice and neat. And I'm like, I mean, you might, but it's not going to help you long term.
And I always have that one wire that hangs below the TV that sticks out. And it doesn't bother me. I'll never get to it, but the wife points it out like every day. Hey, that wire's hanging.
Gaffer's tape. Still hanging. Gaffer's tape.
Yeah.
That stuff is great. That's what I use to attach cables to the back of TVs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a way to do it. And I kind of do that as soon as I organize my computer cables. It seems like the next day something comes up that I need to then get into them. And then I can leave them undone for months or years, never get into them. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to organize these things. And then I start doing that again the next day. You're like, oh, I need in here. TJ, I'm going to ask you first, when you think about lighting, and we have all these options today with lights, what you can do. And there's all kinds, like just go to any hardware store and there's all these different kinds and all the hubs and there's ecosystems. For the average consumer, is it possible to go with the same stuff and have one app that controls them all? Or are we just kind of screwed to be like, well, you're going to have five apps on your phone and you're going to bring them together with the Amazon ecosystem? Yeah. TJ, thoughts on that?
I mean, I think you can do that depending on what your end goal is. So the problem, I think, with home automation at the moment is that you really have to determine what you want your home automation system to do. And there's certain people like Gavin, Seth, and I who we want our automation system to kind of do everything, if not most everything. And that's hard to do without proper planning. But I think if you want individualized stuff like lighting control, it's super easy to do. You know, Lutron Caseta, for example, is probably the best like consumer option out there right now. It works great. It's lightning fast. They have, you know, dimmers and switches and a couple other things that fit into it. So, you know, if you just want that, you can do that. But it also ties into everything as well. So if you wanted to bring it into Amazon Alexa or Smart Things or Home Assistant, whatever it is, you can do that. And so like, that's a really good option for, I would say, the majority of people, unless you want to get into other things like dimmable LED strips and tunable, you know, LED bulbs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, that's always the thing. I bought some Christmas lights for that are smart, that put them out there, and they're Philips, but they have all their own Philips app, different mm-hmm. than the Philips Hub app, that like, download this app and then it has firmware. And you're like, oh, it's, you know, check the firmware. Gavin, when you think about lighting, do you think you can consolidate it to one company, or can you just go with what's available, what you can get, and just make it work through the apps or make it work through Home Assistant?
I wouldn't say you consolidate to one company, but even consolidating it to one protocol. So lighting's actually come a long way in the last few years, especially with the neutral versus no neutral lights. You know, you could get lights today that if you don't have a neutral in your box, they'll still work. That's, you know, that makes things much better for people. But I like to, myself personally, I like to keep my lights, smart lights and light switches, the same protocol. So when you have a Z-Wave smart light and a Z-Wave switch, you can use something called associations to match them together so that you're able to control that smart light without the hub being on. And Zigbee has its own version called bindings. So if you had Zigbee smart lights and Zigbee switches, if your hub ever was off for whatever reason, they still control each other. You could still control it. It still works. So that's how I approach lighting and smart lights and stuff like that, is I try and keep it to a single protocol for that situation.
Seth, you mentioned you did I can't remember what you said, professional installs. Are you still doing them? No, you said you're doing more engineering stuff.
I work for like on the distributor side of things, and okay. I mostly do programming. It's kind of my day job is more project management and server DevOps, like just literally
somebody's got to do that stuff, yeah. Right? Somebody has to get that stuff done. As you think about though doing new installs as you did before, when new installs are being done, do you try to get all the same equipment from similar manufacturers to try and have it all work together? Or is there, like Gavin said, is there some amount that you just get the right protocol or
well, on the custom integrator side, the professional side, right? Like that's their day job. That's how they feed their kids at night. Right. So like, it's a little different story. What they tend to do is train and learn one system and kind of stick with that, maybe one or two. And depending on what the strengths of those two systems are, they'll kind of flip-flop it back and forth between those. But switching to another brand, or another brand of home automation, another brand of lighting, is like a five-year process for them, typically. So it's not an easy thing to do, to switch over their business and build up another side of it. So when I was doing it, I started... We were kind of doing the Harmony remote things and got burned on a lot of those. had to go back and replace a lot of them.
Yeah.
Apologize really? Many times. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Many times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably 40 or 50 of them. Thank you.
Logitech. Wow.
Yeah. Not a good thing. And then I started using a little bit of URC, and at the time we were Control 4 dealers. But they hadn't really released a product yet. They were very much in their startup phase. Now, this is probably 10, 15 years ago. And after they kind of launched that, we pretty much standardized on that and kind of moved. That's been my main line. I've known and dealt with Lutron, Lutron Caseta, Lutron Raw, Raw 2, all the way back. But it's not... most of the stuff I use was like in my house here. I've got like all the Control 4 stuff still set up from those days.
Well, and is that the difference? Like when you're installing for someone else, they're not technically, or they're probably not most likely a home automation enthusiast. They just want it to work, right?
It's a mixed bag. Yeah. What's interesting is when Gavin was talking about like standardizing on a protocol, like Control 4 is all Zigbee, right? But they used like, back before Zigbee 3.0 existed, they had all these different profile things. I don't know. They had one called Zigbee HA, which is a home automation one. And that's kind of what they used. And when they did that, they kind of have like this, I don't know how to call it, like a flavoring on top of Zigbee that you have to conform with, or it just doesn't work with their system. And it's not like I could go out and buy an Innovelli switch and pair it with a Control 4 system. It just won't work that way. Yeah. But I did talk to somebody the other day at Control 4, and they said that's their goal, is they're moving all their devices, all the Zigbee devices. Their goal is to move them over to Zigbee 3. So, you know, that would be kind of big and huge for, I think, a lot of people who like me, like may have a system that works fine with Zigbee. Mm-hmm. And then if I can get, you know, some Innovelli switches and kind of mix things in, I'm fine with that. I do like things to look the same, so I wouldn't put like an Innovelli switch next to Control 4. I'd swap them out, but it comes down to kind of the aesthetic, the look, and then also what device works best, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Gavin, let me ask you this. The I felt like there was a home automation phase, super exciting, maybe follow the Gartner hype cycle, right, where lots of innovation, lots of companies, and companies were bought by companies. Some companies stopped. We mentioned Logitech doing, it's not like Logitech stopped. They just stopped making the Harmony remote and then supporting it and some of those kinds of things, right? Yeah. They make plenty of money, right? But I feel like, and maybe all of you can address this. I feel like we're in this trough of disillusionment that it's really I feel like consumers are buying some of this stuff, but they don't really know what they're doing with it. I mean, my wife bought a smart light bulb having no idea. She just bought one. She's like, it's smart. Just put it in. I was like, well, I might have bought a different one. She's like, aren't they all the same? So Gavin, do you feel like in this, we're to the point, there's us, there's you guys who talk about this all the time. You know how to do it. You know how to make it work. The average consumer, though, I don't hear him talking about it very much. Am I just out of the loop on stuff, or do you guys feel that too, Gavin?
I almost feel like with the people, there was a hype for it, and they went and got their smart speaker and stuff like that, and they had a bad experience with it. I feel like a lot of people I know just had a bad experience, and it's sitting on their desk muted now, and they don't even talk to it or use it. And a lot of it, I feel like confusion from, I'm not going to say the major manufacturers, but all those small manufacturers that put the buzzwords on their products to try and get you to buy it, they use the words like smart, you know, and then you go buy it and you realize this doesn't integrate with anything. Mm-hmm. Or even 2 years later, it doesn't work anymore because their cloud service is down, right? I think we're at the point where a lot of people got bit badly and they're either stuck in certain situations or they just can't bother, because there was also a period when there was a lot of issues you were having with certain Z-Wave products or certain Zigbee. A lot of people love the early Aquara devices, right? But the way they implemented their Zigbee, they would drop off other hubs, right? They were not reliable. And that was because the manufacturer did something different, right? No. Their newer stuff's great and very reliable. But that gave people a bad taste that were really enthusiastic about it. Because they were constantly fighting these issues and stuff like that. And yes, I agree. And yes, you mentioned it. The innovation seems to be slowed down a lot now. Everyone's coming out with a Me Too. I call it the Me Too product. Like, hey, we have switches. We have contact sensors. But no one's really innovating as much as they used to be. And I'd like to see more innovation.
There is one Harmony remote user still out there. John says he's still using his Harmony remote.
With John and Gavin.
Gavin, yeah.
I have five Harmony remotes in my house, and I have one backup, and I bought them all used, so I got them at great prices. But the main reason why is because the TV experience in every room is the exact same.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why I have the same remote. And so when the wife goes to any TV, it's the same experience in every room.
Yeah, it's the same reason whenever we're doing like Rokus and stuff at somebody's house. I'm like, you might as well just install Rokus on like all five of your TVs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really need them though. And I'm like, you do though, because it's going to make it all the same and you're going to know how to operate every single TV.
Yep.
Yeah, the same experience for sure. TJ, what do you think as far as is that question? What would you say to that?
I just don't think home automation is that important to most people. I think people use home automation to solve simple issues, and that's it. They don't need to automate all of their lights and you know their lawn mowing and everything else.
All right, now you're getting carried away.
Cut them off, cut them off. Seth, what do you think now?
I think it's one of those things that like most of the time when I go into like we do a lot of landscape lighting at my company. And most of the time we sell like a smart outdoor plug, usually a Lutron Caseta, because it's like the easiest way to control your landscape lights. And that's majority of the time, maybe close to majority of the time, that is maybe the only smart home product in their house. Mm-hmm. They don't have any other smart home product. And we use it just to turn the lights on and off at, you know, sunset and sunrise and everything like that. We're not using it for anything fancy. And I think that's what most people are doing. They're just automating a light or an outlet or whatever it is, and they don't need everything automated.
I have a question for TJ. So do you think the reason why is because people don't know what they can do with automation? Because people come to my house and they see certain things. They're like, I want that. I tell them no, but they never knew that was possible.
Yeah, I just think it's a time and effort thing. Because if you like, so I was actually thinking today, somebody should come up with a home assistant add-on to tell me how much time I spend in like the automation or devices tab. Because it's just, you have to have a ton of time and effort into this stuff. And Gavin, you know this because I harass you sometimes. And I'm like, Gavin, can we set up like a Zoom call so you can help me set up this automation or figure Blue Iris out or whatever? And it's just people don't have the time and resources and energy to do that. I mean, I barely do. And I really like doing this stuff. So,
Seth, I can't wait to hear what you're going to say. Your face lit up when they were talking about that.
they're both right in a couple of respects, but I think they're dancing around. I mean, they're both saying the same thing, essentially. Like, what... It's not a matter of money or time or effort, because I saw a ton of people throw a ton of money at these products over the years. And I saw a ton of people put a ton of time into using these products over the years. And what happened, I think, is everyone rushed out to get all of these things that, and they were promised all of these beautiful home automations and smart homes. And when they got it home, it was a significantly more expensive light bulb that they had just paid for that didn't do anything, and the expectation was not met in any aspect of this industry, and that is why it has basically fallen flat on its face. I think the only thing that is continued to this day to actually keep to maintain sales is like outdoor security and security doorbells, which have proven to be and gotten to be a little bit better over time. But as far as like even lighting control, I mean, it's still not a smart home. It's just automation, and that's not a smart home. Like, I still have to go tell it what to do, and I don't want to tell it what to do. I want it to figure out how I live, and I want it to use that information and privately, hopefully, instead of, you know, shuffling it off to some server somewhere, privately do that every single day and meet my expectation as I need it. And we do not have that today. We are not even close to that. I always go back to this. I had to look it up, and it's this horrible, it wasn't bad. It was an okay show back in 2018 called The First. It had, it was on Hulu. It had Sean Penn, and he was like the big name on there, and they had Sean Penn posters up everywhere. And it was like this Journey to Mars thing. But if you watch that show, it takes place somewhere in the near future. If you watch that show, they nailed what home automation should be. They nailed what the experience should be. There's all sorts of cool technology, the floating screens and big giant TV screens that disappear into your wall and that kind of stuff. But the little parts where they're walking into like this old looking home and they just say lights on, boom, the lights are on. Or they walk into a room and the lights barely dim on. They nailed what it should be. They figured that out in this TV show, and we should all aspire to what they did in this TV show because it's really good.
All right, so our thermostats do some of that, right? Where they are doing some monitoring, some learning. They're trying to get it right and figure out your habits. They have sensors. They've got some, you know, they've got some input from you. As you think about lighting or some of those other home automation things, are they just lacking the ability to take input? Like, you know, a light doesn't know you're in the room for the most part if it doesn't have a sensor on it. I don't know. Seth, thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, that's part of it. Yeah, absolutely. But again, as a consumer, why do I care? Like, I had a light switch on the wall and I flip it and it worked just fine for 100 years, right?
Yeah.
We've got to replace that. And it's a tall order if we've got to replace it. And oh yeah, we've got some homework for you to do. Can you fill out this form and tell us what, you know, and it's only going to work 80% of the time. And if the internet's down, it's not going to work at all. I mean, we really missed the boat on home automation for the past 10 years and maybe longer, but it's an early industry. I still think we've got a ways to go. I tell people this all the time. We have had electricity for 100 years. We've had plumbing for a few thousand. We've had housing and roofs technology and walls and that kind of thing for a little bit longer. All that's been figured out. It's pretty standardized. Like, you go down and you buy a fitting for your faucet, it's a known quantity. Mm-hmm. But if you go down and buy a smart light bulb, it's not.
It's
the Wild West.
Will it standardize, do you think, Gavin? Will it standardize? Yeah. Do you see that coming?
They're working on it. That's what Matter is supposed to be doing, right?
But is Matter mattering? Last time you were on, we asked that question.
I'm becoming skeptical again. We got to get Daniel back on our show.
We got to get him to sway us.
Know, like the latest news of, you know, they're coming out with Matter 1.3, but now you're starting to see some fragmentation out there with what ecosystem has what version of Matter, because they all have different features. They support different products. That's where, you know, I was worried was going to happen, and that's what's happening. And we'll see. But I think the next major milestone for home automation, this is, again, my opinion, is AI. I go, if they get it to the point where they integrate AI with your home automation system, so you don't really have to program anything, you could just say, hey, when everybody leaves this house, you know, turn on the alarm system. And it says, yes, sir. And, you know, that's all you have to do. And it knows that, hey, somebody just drove up. Well, someone, you know, that lives here. Let me turn on these lights. Let me do this, you know, without thinking, you know, without you programming that all in. I think that's where the next step of home automation is going to go.
Abstract, exactly what Gavin's talking about. Abstract away these apps and all, like, the control surface is just abstracted away. I want to tell something, either type it in or I tell it, just like we're talking about, I don't care. And it does it. That's all it needs to, like, hey, when I leave home, make sure you turn off the lights. And then I don't have to worry about it. And it's got to do it, right? It has to know how to do it. It has to know what app to go through and what button to press. But that shouldn't be on me.
Yeah, exactly. And even be smart to say, okay, he meant all the lights, but not the front door light, you know? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. Like, AI, it's very impressive what it's doing, and I'd like to see it get to that point. Mm.
Must be a firm believer in AI then, since you're always having co-pilot problems.
Wrong show. Don't get me started.
The other night we were having a thunderstorm that came through, and from time to time, you know, we'll lose power for just a moment, just enough, right? Lights go off, lights come back on. Now everything here is plugged to everything. All the computer systems down here in the studio are running through a battery. You know, I bought one of those solar generators, so it stays up just fine. But all the other home automation thinks, what had happened? I flicked the light switch. And what does that mean? Turn everything on, right? If it was off, turn it on. And so I'm down here working, and I go upstairs, and the upstairs is just blazing lit. The Christmas lights that I turned off weeks ago are all back on, and you know, the front door is on full blast, and you're like, oh, I was like, what is going on up here? Why are all these lights on? And it's like, oh, we got the universal, you know, up and on and off. I'd love to think, Gavin, to your point, that there would be a controller that would be that could kind of think through that and say, oh, wait a minute. I am monitoring these lights. They all came on full blast. That must have been a power surge. I'm going to reset that back to the previous condition. And then it would set those, it would kind of set those back down. Is that, guys, do you think that's, we're saying this, but do you think it'll happen in our lifetime that we'll get an AI smart enough? Seth, do you think we'll get an AI smart enough to,
yeah,
to actually do stuff like that?
Well, so the problem is that you're talking about a point device, a little one device. It doesn't know what's around it. It doesn't have any concept that the light's turned off. Like, what you need is that step back. The it needs to have the perspective that you had when you walked in the door. Like, it needs to have the perspective that maybe the neighborhood has, that there was a power outage and then the power's back on. That kind of stuff can definitely help make an AI or whatever we want to call AI. I'm not sure it's going to be an AI thing, but you know, it can make it look smarter, and it really just has to prop up and look smarter. It's just got to be a little bit better than what we're doing now, and relieve a lot of this tenuous just automation gook that we have. Like, it's kind of awful right now, honestly, like across the board, professional, DIY, home assistant, doesn't matter what you're using. It's honestly, it's not what it should be. We're getting there.
Yeah, it is pretty annoying because it's like you're trying to set up an automation through Home Assistant. And it's like, for me, I have to like, I look up videos and all that stuff, but you really have to like drill down and how it actually works and then keep refining it and everything like that. And it's AI, it would be nice for something like that because you would just tell it and be done with it.
Yep.
The AI is coming. I've seen some stuff I can't talk about, but they're working on stuff that's really, really impressive. And
that's a tease right
there. It's also scary. It's also scary when you see what it's doing too, because what if it decides that to protect us, it's got to destroy us? You know, like
you're the first one out, Gavin.
Wow.
I treat my robot vacuums with respect, so I'm safe, right? You guys don't.
Hey, like, the robot vacuum can't hurt you. What is it going to do? Make you trip?
Brush you?
Yeah, it's gonna jump on your face and then you know, turn itself on, and you won't be able to breathe. You know, I bought a smart add-on for my garage door and installed it, installed the app, connected it to Home Assistant, connected it to the Amazon devices. And I liked it. You could, you know, you would say, hey, open the garage door. It asks for a code and I give it a verbal code and it opened. It closed. Then I set the schedule to close it. If I'd open it and stayed open for 30 minutes, close it. That was the worst thing I ever did ever, because I'd be out Saturdays working in the yard, open the garage door, go out, mow the lawn, come back around to get something out of the garage. It'd be closed. You know, like, oh,
not like that. Don't do that.
Yeah, no,
I didn't mean that. So come on.
I disabled that. And then at some point the automation broke. Like, you know, I don't know how these things happen, but the device just went offline.
Normal. That's the problem.
The feature. It was like, you're not using me enough. Oh, if you don't want to close, if you don't mean to close the garage door automatically for you, I'll just go offline. I haven't missed it. That's the thing. The other day, the funny thing is, the other day my wife yelled out, you know, hey lady, close, you know, close the garage door. I'm like, oh, that hasn't worked in 6 months. Yes. I hope you didn't do that thinking it was closing.
It's like,
you know,
we live in the same house.
So that happens to you too.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I was like, no, the garage door hasn't worked in a long time. I do think this, like, even as humans, we get stuff wrong. And I think we have this expectation for AI that it's just going to get it right every time. But I listen, life's complicated. Like, people leave lights on. People make decisions to leave the garage door open. People like, and or they wanted it open. Like, how would the garage door know? When I guess because would it say, oh, it's Saturday. Jim normally does yard work on Saturdays. I'm going to leave it open extra. Or would it ask me? Like, at some point, would it be smart enough to ask me and say, hey, do you want me to leave this open?
it would be smart enough that it looks at your cameras and sees you walking out the garage to the side in front of the house and say, oh, Seth, he's probably out there doing gardening. Like, some of the AI stuff can actually identify the action you are doing, right, when you're out there on your video. So it can identify if you're cycling, you know, if you're cleaning your car, you know, stuff like that. So that's just information that's, like Seth said, fed into the AI. And it can make educated decisions based on that.
But who feeds this in, Gavin? We say that, but it'll be like, who's training this toddler?
You know, on its own from your video feeds. That's what I'm saying. That's the problem. That's the scary part, right? You know,
people in India right now. That's how it's happening.
Amazon and Mechanical Turk machine name set up. Yeah. That's the problem with the large language model stuff. It's kind of like, I made this random number generator. Here you go. And like, we don't know what it does. We just ask it a question and it comes back with a semi-coherent sentence that makes sense. And sometimes it's right. And it's way better than asking Siri about anything. So like, this must be artificial intelligence. But the same technology can be used to collect massive amount of sensor data. Yeah. Aggregate it, figure out what it does, and assign those little points that it signs, and then figure out what to do. That same technology can use that data, which is encouraging, because right now they're using it to, make dirty pictures or movies or whatever they're doing. But like same time, the same technology can be used to improve home automation or improve automation or improve your thermostat, like how efficient your thermostat operates during the day. You can take all the thermostat data from an area, throw it through one of these large language models, and it can look at the data and kind of figure out something that works a little bit, that works 90% better than what you were doing before.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think there's got to be a way, though, to get input back into it when it gets it wrong.
I wish there was.
I think that's the missing. I think that's the missing. For humans, that's pain.
It is.
We have pain, you know, we have nerves. And when we make a mistake, we feel it, and then we go, oh, not going to do that again. Or it's emotional pain. I say something to someone else, and I lose that relationship. And I go, oh, I probably shouldn't talk like a jackass to the people that way.
I'd be happy if we could say, like, bad Siri, and it would know. You know?
No, right on.
But you wouldn't do that because you would.
Yeah,
you're trying to piece
the robots. Yeah.
Oh, that's true, too.
Let's just admit that. I say we make it simple. You know, on some of the apps on your phone, whenever you shake your phone, it tries to do the diagnostic thing. I think we do something similar where we just clap twice, and that's how the smart home knows that it made a mistake.
I'll bring back the clapper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clap on.
That's right.
I think it's really, obviously, if it wasn't complicated, they'd have this solved already. Right. And so I think we've got, we have multiple layers of it, of whatever this, let's call it home, you know, advanced home automation for now, as opposed to AI. But we've got a bunch of layers to work through to figure out the feedback loop. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the technology holds us back, except in the case where the problem is this technology kept getting better and better and better. So they kept dropping, oh, let's not use this protocol because that doesn't work very well. So we're going to go to this. And it was changing so fast, you know, this was maybe the Harmony Remotes problem in some regard. Things were just changing so fast. And Logitech says, you know, I don't know if we want to play this game. You know, somebody just kind of said, let's get out of this thing while the going is good.
Yeah.
So
I think with them, it was more of a numbers game, like for the amount of support they threw into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big project.
Small audience, large.
And it's getting smaller because everybody's, like TJ just mentioned, everybody's getting a Roku and it's putting on an Apple TV. And they've got that one remote on all their TVs. They don't need a Logitech Harmony.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The five folks that are still using it here,
Gavin,
you know, around the world. Gavin, John, Brian, and three other people. Yeah, that are out there. Let's talk a little bit about outside. You mentioned robot vacuum cleaners, but I am perpetually debating this robot lawnmower, and I'm kind of glad that I waited because they keep getting better. I just saw this all-wheel drive mower, and it starts with an L. I forget, Lubic or
Luba.
Yeah, Luba. I think
that's right. I'm looking at too.
Yeah, it's about $2,500, probably $3,000. They are pricey. They're all-wheel drive. Yet I am working on getting my yard smaller and smaller and smaller. So I kind of think, no, maybe I could use a little exercise. Seth, TJ, I think you guys have them. Gavin doesn't, which surprises me a little bit. But what do you think? What's the state? TJ, I'll start with you. State of robot mowers today, do you think? Yes,
Seth definitely bought one first, but I just bought one a couple weeks ago. I wanted to wait until they could drive themselves, and I have to do the boundary wire around the whole property.
Right.
And I got the Segway Navimo i110N, and I think it's capable of a quarter acre. But it has the RTK Plus Vision, and so it's kind of cool with the app. You drive it around the property to show it where to mow, and then it just goes and does its thing afterwards. And it does a pretty good job. Of course, as soon as I got this thing, it started raining like every other day. And so I haven't been able to test it out fully. But
can't you drive it in the rain? Is that one of those things?
But it has like a rain detection. It says not to. It gums it up pretty easily.
Yeah.
And so it's actually funny. The first day I got it, my grass, it was probably between like 3 and 4 inches tall. And on the manual, I was like, oh, give your grass a cut before you use it for the first time. So have something fresh to start off with. And I was like, heck no, we're going to go ahead and just cut everything.
What did I pay for?
Yeah, like, well, I just paid $1,300 for this thing. We're going to give it a shot and see how
that robot was like negative check.
Yep. I'm
this guy's already abusing me.
Yeah. Good thing it has really tiny blades on it. Yeah. But yeah, I drove around the whole yard. It cut all the grass. It's pretty cool. Whenever it got stuck, it got itself unstuck. I mean, and I don't have any like super steep inclines or big potholes or anything like that in my yard. So, it does a pretty good job, and I've been happy with it so far. The only thing I don't like is because it uses GPS, you have to have a GPS antenna in your yard. And the GPS antenna cannot be near other obstacles. And so you have to space it off 2 meters from your house and any large trees. And as you're driving it around, it kind of checks the GPS signal as well. And it tells you where you should place it in the yard. And of course, it's not where you want to place it.
No.
So I have to find a permanent home for it now if I'm going to keep it.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, put it over the pool. There's nothing there.
Yeah. And perfect. I have an outlet that's like right next to like my air conditioner, and I'm like, oh, that's perfect. There's nothing really over there, and it's too close to the house. So,
what'd you pay for it? If I can ask,
yeah, it was like $1,300.
Okay.
So I made it a promise to myself that I would offload some electronics in order to buy it. Oh. So I sold some stuff and I put the money towards it, and it was between that and a used Husqvarna Automo. Those have integration with Home Assistant. Those ones are pretty expensive too. But they have the boundary wire, and I'm not trying to deal with that.
No, right on. Right on. Seth, what about you? What do you have?
I have I have the boundary wire. I have the dumb version. I paid like maybe $400 or $500 for mine.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And it was, I don't know how I got that. It was on Amazon. I saw it. I'm like, oh, bingo. There we go. But I've got the boundary. I had to go around and put the boundary wire in. It does break from time to time. You have to fix it. Find where it's broken and fix it. Although it's usually pretty easy to find because there's a wire sticking out of your lawn. It's not the greatest lawnmower. I don't know if I would recommend it for anybody, but it does do the job, and it did keep me out of like doing the lawn work over the summer. Right now, it's about time to start mowing the lawn again.
Yeah.
And the power company is coming through and ripping up my front lawn to put in power. Like they're burying the old telephone pole wires, I guess. Yeah. So I there's still a mess out there, and I call mine Clippy. So I've sent him out a couple of times, and he's done a little bit of work, but then he'll get stuck in one of the holes that they've dug. I don't try to help him. He just, you know, when he falls in a hole, I just leave him there and scolding.
Did you keep a push mower as backup, or did you get rid of it?
I still have. What I did get rid of was this giant riding. What caused this whole thing for me was I had this big riding lawnmower. I have a larger piece of land in the back of my yard that's like a giant slope that goes down into a creek, and it's pie shaped. Like the front yard's not very big, but the backyard is too big because of this pie shaped property I have, and it's not fun to mow. And I finally got this big lawnmower from somebody, and it was just awful. It kept breaking. It was a big maintenance thing to do, and I hated mowing anyway. So I got rid of that, and then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to buy this other lawnmower and put it in. And so that Clippy's been running around doing fine for about, I think, a year or so. I think I've had him about a year now.
And, is it and it random? Is it just random? It doesn't leave lines.
It's completely dumb. Yeah,
this Lubo is leaving lines, and you know you're like, ooh, well, this thing's kind of cool. Is it Lubo? Is that what it? Luba?
Yeah,
Luba. Yeah,
Luba.
That's the only one I've seen that can handle that slope that I have, and also, I have a particular kind of grass that really doesn't work well if you cut it less than like 4 inches. Like it really, if you cut it 6 inches, that'd be great. But it's like this Florida grass, and if it's eat out all the weeds and everything, and if it's short, then it starts to die out or look brown and not good. So
Zoysia, is it Zoysia grass?
That's the shorter one. I forget, Bahia grass or something like that.
Okay.
It's the Florida natural grass that they have in the fields here, but it just needs to be a little bit taller than most of these lawnmowers can handle.
Lawers will do. Yeah. We'll do. Gavin, how come you don't have one? I would think of anybody. I mean, I know you live in Canada.
Yeah.
But why don't you have a that seemed like the perfect environment for a robot lawnmower.
That's the part that upsets me the most, because I was the first to like want one and these guys got it before me. Like that hurt. That hurt. Like a couple years ago, I was looking at them, but they were still $3,000-$4,000 back then, right? So every time I cut the lawn, I'd check the price. You know, next week I cut the lawn, I'd check the price again. But this year, I find that the prices have dropped significantly. And they're now, like, you can find them in the $1,000 range with good features, you know? And I expect it to actually continue to drop. And, you know, it'll reach a point when I can finally convince the wife that I, you know, I should get one. The only other reason I'm hesitant is because I reduced my lawn in the back, so I don't have much back there. All my lawn's in the front, but I'm also nervous that this thing will get stolen in my neighborhood and that, you know, it'll be out there cutting. And I don't mind as long as they return it when they realize it doesn't work, but they're not going to return it. You know, so doing all the whole claim and stuff like that.
Dumpster still want to call it good.
Exactly. Yeah.
This Luba 2, just to be clear, it's this setup is you drive it around, you install the app, and then you drive it around your yard, mapping it out, and you can map out, you can move it, map out. TG, I think you said, what's the device? RTK?
RTK Plus Vision.
What does that stand for?
Heck if I know.
Okay.
That's centimeter GPS protocol or whatever. It gets on the centimeter level GPS.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, because I've heard that, and it reminds me of that movie Looper when they have the TK, the folks that have the do you guys know, do you ever see the movie Looper? They have they have a TK gene, and they can make things telekinesis in their hands like that. So whenever I've heard that TK, RTK, I'm like, what? Now I know the difference. So thanks for clarifying that. So let's see, where was I going with that? So Gavin, no, you're waiting on money.
Yeah.
You're waiting for the okay.
You're waiting for the CFO to approve it.
Yeah. Like I'm looking at the Luba right now, and the Luba 5000 is $4,000 in Canada dollars.
Yeah. Wow. It's all-wheel drive, though. It's like the Subaru of
do you need like a super expensive one, though? If you don't have that big of a yard, do you have a slope
I have a significant slope at the side, so I'm gonna. That's the problem, you know. But one day I will get there, you know.
It creates stripes. That's the thing. It creates stripes.
What's a going rate for a kidney right now?
Canadian money? I mean, you guys got free healthcare, so.
I have two of them. I only need one, American. Right?
Like, yeah, you got to come down here.
Sell it to an American. I'm sure they'll buy it.
All right.
What do you guys think? This is getting asked, or Tony asked this in chat. What do you think? I think, though, by the way, I think robot vacuum cleaners are pretty good at this point. They've got a lot of good ones. The prices are pretty good on those. Those have kind of standardized. But what do you think about these snow blowers? Now, Seth, you don't have to worry about snow. TJ, Gavin, exactly. You do. And Seth, just pretend for a second you get, you know, a little bit of, you know, a little bit of fluffy white stuff. Do you think all the electric snow blowers I've seen haven't really lived up to their expectations? But in the fall, do you guys start looking at, like, could I get a robot snow thrower?
I haven't personally, because we just don't get that much snow to justify it.
Yeah.
We maybe get a couple inches at a time. So going out with a shovel to shovel my sidewalk, my driveway, isn't that inconvenient. And I could probably just pay a kid to do it if I wanted to. So
yeah, not worth it. Gavin, what about you? You get a little more snow than we do.
We get a little bit more snow, but I also feel like when we get snow, it falls faster than this, a robot snowblower would, be able to keep up with it. And it gets heavy once you get so much. So they'll be dangerous, right? Like, I think it's a safety issue. I'd be more nervous about a robot snowblower. I've seen them where they have the attachment, turns it from snowblower into lawnmower, etc. But I'd be a little nervous about letting that thing go on the driveway.
Yeah, Seth, you mentioned it. Yours has got little blades. So if you, even if you put your hand underneath the thing and it didn't stop, it's not going to, like, take your hand off. These, to get snow a significant distance, you got to have an auger moving pretty fast, right? And yeah, you're probably right, Gavin. I don't know if I'd, and I like clearing snow. That's one of those things. I like mowing too. This has been the hard part, is there is something satisfying for me about mowing. Could be it's the only exercise that I get on a regular basis. So, you know, you're like, my daughter, when I was going to pick up a robot vacuum cleaner, she's like, Dad, that's like the one exercise that you get during the winter.
Right. Shots fired.
It's true.
She's right. Also,
don't have 70 or 80% humidity during the summer.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, my thing too is I don't mind the mowing the grass for me. It needs it so often, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that's nice where I don't have to worry about it. I just walk out and mess with the garden and stuff like that, and I don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
The way these work, they're really cool, because they just go out and they mow a little bit, right? They're not like me, where when I go mow, they really need to be mowed. Like, I don't
know. You want it to mean something.
Yeah. There's a line where I. The grass goes from like 14 inches down to 3 or something. You know, like there's a significant difference. There's piles and piles of grass cuttings after. But the idea behind these is they just consistently are out there doing their thing, and kind of just keeping it at a normal level. And it's just that constant mowing. Like during the summer here, the little guy would be out mowing the lawn, and he was just bouncing around in the backyard. But after a week or two, or after a week here, with some rain, where he stopped, like, I had to take a weed eater and level that off with the rest of the grass, because you definitely notice. What I really would like to see, I think it's coming, and I'm pretty sure it is, because I think like Husqvarna has some commercial versions of this. There's gonna be a time where lawn services companies are renting these to you or leasing these to you and just building it as part of their services, and they'll stick it in the lawn, they'll take care of them. There are maintenance to these, so if you guys are like, TJ, you're about to learn, but like, every week or two, you're going to be replacing those little blades, because they do get dull, and the battery will work harder to cut grass if they're dull, and you'll have to just swap out the little razor blades. It's not a big maintenance. It gets dirty. It gets clogged up. Sometimes you got to get out there and with a screwdriver and clean it out or whatever. So there's still maintenance to them. So I think it makes a lot of sense for a company to go drop one of these off in your yard, set it up, make it do its thing, and then once a week they still come by, not in a giant rig with the, you know, out here in Florida,
right,
it's crazy.
Right.
They have these rigs with trailers and giant lawnmowers that just, they're so loud all day. But they just come out and they could edge and blow out the leaves and everything, and everything would still look great. I think that's coming. It's somebody's going to figure it out and how to do it and price it right and sell it to these little companies that are out there doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. It's a good thought. That's actually a nice segue. We'll end on this last segment here. We'll do a little bit of a lightning round. I want to ask you guys, Seth, you led the way here, a future product that you're kind of got your eyes on right now that may not be fully mature yet, but is showing some promise. I won't even call on names. It's just as you think of something, just say it and say why, and then we'll move on to the next person. What do you think? Who's got a product? Seth already did his.
I'll just say I did mine. Yeah.
You can do it again if you want. But what are you looking at, TJ or Gavin? What are you looking at that you're excited about? We did a lot of trash talking of home automation in the beginning of this. Let's do a little positive. What kind of things are we looking forward to in the future?
Go for Gavin's going to say Matter 3.1.
All right, TJ, you've been nominated. You go first.
Yeah, I think so. One thing I've been really getting into recently, and I think I'm a little late to the party, but maybe not, is the white tunable LED bulbs. I've been messing with in Home Assistant. There's an add-on called Adaptive Lighting, and Adaptive Lighting basically turns on the correct color temperature and the brightness for the time of day, depending on, you know, the lights and everything like that. And so a month ago, two months ago, something like that, I installed some recessed lights in the kitchen. I installed some recessed lights in the hallway, and I went with Philips Hue RGBW recessed can lights in those. And they're paired to an Innovelli smart switch. And, you know, they turn on with motion, and they turn off, you know, without motion, but they also adjust the color temperature and the brightness depending on what time of day it is. And so, you know, the goal is to not get blinded by light, you know, in the morning or at nighttime or anything like that. It does a mostly good job. There's a lot of parameters you can adjust, but honestly, I'm running pretty much the stock stuff, and it does a really good job. And so we're working on this pantry build out right now. And I need to get some lights into the pantry, and I think I'm going to do those the white tunable LED strips in the pantry, just underneath each shelf. That should be enough light in there, I would think. But you know, just automatically adjust to the daytime light outside.
Mm. What's a good, if I thought about a, you know, that 1,000 number, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. I know everybody's got a different opinion on that, but TJ, is there a you know, if you were going to have the optimal light for you in that range, what would you set it at?
I mean, you know? I kind of bounce around between like 3,000 and 4,000. Okay. You know, 5,000 is nice depending on what you're doing in the area and stuff like that, but it's mainly 3,000 to 4,000 for me.
Okay. Yeah. I only know that I bought some new studio lights, and they're dumb. Mm-hmm. So I got to turn them on. I can't set them through the automation. But they have dials in the back that you can dial it in. And so I've been messing around with the different to see what I like. And sometimes I set one color and one the other just to bounce them off, so it's not all the same whiteness down here. But I'm still kind of messing with that in my camera to try and get it right. I'm still a little white tonight on this. I think I need to dial it in some more. So I'm still kind of working on that. Gavin, what about you? What are you excited about?
I think I talked about this before last time I was on the show, but I'm looking forward to battery powered millimeter wave sensors. Mm. And I talked about millimeter wave sensors before. I think they're amazing. You know, like, they're not motion sensors. They're kind of like occupancy sensors. They tell you when somebody's in the room, and you can base a lot of automations off that, and you could sit still and it's still detects you in the room. The problem is everything out right now, it uses a lot of battery power, So everything out right now, you have a USB cord. And I don't know why it's always a USB cord, because I never have a place to cleanly plug this into, you know? But
yeah,
everything's a USB cord and it's ugly. But recently, one of our listeners let us know that they ordered some battery-powered ones. We're going to see how well they work. But the fact that they came out, it's the first step in moving in that direction. And I think it'll just get better from there. So once we have battery powered millimeter wave sensors that can last a good amount of time, I'm going to be jumping on them for my next purchases.
What's a good amount of time for you?
I'm looking like a year. Like, if you could get a year out of them, I'm good with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I've noticed this trend to short USB cables for every, like, short ones coming. And you're like, Where did you expect me to plug this thing into? Like, what's the, you know, Seth, maybe to your desire to get rid of cables, those would be an absolute nightmare, right?
They already are, because I have the Aquara one, and it comes with like a 45 foot long USB cable. I don't know what they were thinking. And I've just it's nice where I put it. It's kind of in a utility room area, and I was able to not hide the wire completely, but at least get rid of it. Man, the USB thing is not great for hiding wires either, because in the wall they have to be a specific rated wire. You know, if you're going to professionally install stuff like fire code, it has to be a specific wire, and you don't get that from these little USB cables. So
yeah,
I would love to see, just give me terminals,
power over Ethernet.
Yeah, PoE would be nice.
PoE.
I would literally install them in every ceiling, in the ceiling of every room, if they just came out with a PoE one.
But the average user doesn't have PoE, or
no, nobody cares about that.
No one cares about it. Yeah.
Yeah, these lights that I bought, they are 20 watts each, which is a little bit of that's pulling a little bit of juice,
right? Yeah.
For a USB device. And I had to get a power converter that was rated for that, because it would smoke. I mean, just your cheap ones that you get, it'll just smoke it, right? Up in smoke. And they were this long. And I was like, how am I going to get them? It's not like I'm going to put a USB extension cable, you know, on them, like one of these. I just smoke that extension. So it took a little bit of rigging and some things to get it all figured out. But it was one of those, I was like, I mean, it was definitely a cheap Chinese set of lights. Let's just be really clear about that. I kind of wanted to try this. These are flat lights that are diffused and had a knob, you know, had the knob to adjust them. And before I bought a really good set, I wanted to try these out. So I thought I'd get these in here and I can give them away to somebody in the future. But it was one of those things where I realized, oh, this USB power thing is out of control. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's just the cabling is awful for some of these things. Seth, I didn't tell you this was going to be the subject, and I just used you as an example. Anything else you want to add now that you've heard the other two that you're excited about?
I thought of something briefly while Gavin was talking, and then promptly forgot it after I drank some more Negroni, but maybe it'll come back to me one day.
All right. Well, maybe talk a little bit about what are you guys excited about? Seth, we'll start with you. Talk a little bit what you're excited about. What's coming up on hometech.fm and what you guys are doing there, and anything, you got anything planned for our summer that maybe you want to highlight on the show?
Oh, I mean, there's always something we're up to. I mean, I have plenty of projects we can talk about that are in process. And see, we talked about how, like, I may not finish them, but we didn't say, like, I never committed the end date. So the projects are open. I know how to manage that time.
Open-ended?
Yeah, they're just open.
Open-ended. By the way, that wasn't me. I didn't say that. Gavin said that. Let's just be really clear about that.
I'm looking out for you, Seth.
Wasn't me.
We've got all sorts of, I mean, we always come up with something to talk about. I think the biggest thing, the most fun thing we're having right now is our stickers campaign that we're doing.
What's that?
Well, TJ stole a bunch of stickers I had.
Oh, I didn't steal them. You gave them to me, and then I forgot that I had them in my pocket.
So TJ has all the stickers, and the other day we were thinking about like what fun things we could do, and turns out he had the stickers because I thought I had them. No, he has them, and we're like, let's just mail them off. So if when you're listening to our show, we tell you where to contact us, and TJ will eventually mail you a sticker.
Nice.
Yeah,
we may even open the offer up here. You know, if you contact us through the show here. We'll send you a sticker at some point. That's what I keep saying. Seth and Gavin keep giving me grief. I'm like, yeah, it's just, we'll send it when it happens. It's a free sticker.
Well, what I'd really like for them to do, if they haven't done this, many folks that listen to this show have done this already, but head over to hometech.fm, listen to one of the shows, get the address that you need, and then request the sticker and they'll send it to you. I'd love you to listen to one of the shows, not just contact me. I mean, you can. I always love to hear from you guys. But
if,
I love
if
you
go you're in it just for the sticker, that's fine too. I mean, you can just be in it for the sticker.
TJ, what about you? What did you think about what's coming? Anything you're excited about from the show perspective coming up? You got anything you want to pimp before I
not let you go? Not necessarily. I think we're working on a couple interviews that haven't materialized yet. So cool. I don't want to name anything specific at the moment. But if you pay attention in the future, that might pop up on your radar.
Another good reason to subscribe, hometech.fm. Get out there, get subscribed to it so you don't miss those interviews. Gavin, what about you?
I'm with Seth here. I'm loving this sticker campaign, right? And the best part about it is people that write in with to the stickers, they quote things you said, or they'll mention things you're doing, or they'll thank you and say how much you love the show. And that feedback really means a lot, because sometimes you're recording and you just think no one listens, you know. That one play was me, you know, just testing if it still works. But no, when we get this kind of, we got a lot of feedback from around the world.
That is nice.
And it's been pretty amazing when they you know, thank you. They thank me for, you know, helping them spend money, for example.
Yeah.
You know, like that. That's what I do.
It's true.
Yeah, I think it's worked out pretty good. I mean, we're sending stickers to the UK and Sweden and Ireland and Australia, all kinds of places. So
is that difficult in the US Post to get those things?
I have no idea. So
I have to find out.
I don't know if you know this, but you can buy a lot of stamps for very cheap off like Facebook Marketplace. And so I bought 200 postal stamps for like $30. And so we're just gonna go for it.
Bootleg stamps.
Just put it in my...
They're like legit rolls of stamps that you would buy, but I think they're like older versions or something. I don't know how the postal service.
Seth, are you questioning this? Are you questioning
this? I have already registered my concern that this may be some type of mail fraud that's taking place, but you know, I
bought them before. It's fine so far.
Yeah, it's somebody bought them, and bought too many of them, and then they need to get rid of them, right?
Fell off a truck, who knows?
Yeah, I didn't really know there was a black market for stamps anymore.
If you're on Facebook, just type in stamps and there's all kinds of posts for stamps, and they're pretty cheap.
That's okay. All right, well, now we know. If you're going to prison, you know what to take in with you. Just taking some black market. Take some black market. No, I mean, not for selling the stamps. I mean, just for other things. Then stamps are the currency inside of prison, so you'd be okay both ways. You'd be okay. Can I take a few with me? You would say on the way in. Well, gentlemen, thank you for hanging out with me tonight. I appreciate it. Seth, great to have you on the program. Thanks for coming out and being a part of it. Appreciate
it. Anytime.
TJ, great to have you back as well. And thanks for all your insights. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely. Good to be here.
And Gavin, thanks for getting these hoodlums to show up tonight. It was I pinged Gavin, said you want to be on. He's like, I think I can get Seth and TJ too. Is that okay?
I think going forward, we should have the team. It should be a team thing, you know. Like, you fill the hour really nice.
Yeah, it fills up, but I like it. You know, you guys talk smack about each other when I have you on individually, so that's kind of nice too.
Well, what's great is we can constantly give Seth grief for not posting the show before you, because I mean we recorded the show like Tuesday this week, and it's not going to be out till like Tuesday next week. So we've got to give him some grief, and that'll add to it.
This will be out Saturday, Seth. So I'm just saying.
Sometimes Friday,
Saturday. Sometimes Friday if I got something going on Saturday. But there's not a lot of things I do consistently in my life. But most of the time we get the podcast. But it's a lot of work. And working with these two yahoos, I am not surprised to take, because you got to kind of clean it up, right?
I don't know how you got TJ with not, you know, TJ didn't curse at all tonight. Usually I got a lot of bleeps to put in. So.
Oh,
because I'm live, I can't do it. But honestly, Seth runs pretty much the whole show. I don't know about Gavin. I feel like Gavin works in IT, so I feel like this is true too. But we just show up and we talk, Gavin Seth does all the work. So
I understand. Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
I had the links and stuff in to help him.
Yeah, it's definitely a team effort, I think, at this point.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Listen, I do Ask the Podcast Coach with Dave Jackson. He does all the work. I just show up on Saturday mornings, and it's pretty great. Now I have to do all the work at work. So I figure for the work podcast, I do enough work here. Here, if I just get great guests, and you guys are great guests, the show just happens. Gavin did provide a few notes for me. We used a little bit of them. And you guys were awesome, so thanks for coming on. Hang tight for me 1 second. Don't go anywhere. I want to remind everyone that Home Gadget Geeks, powered by Maple Grove Partners, get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. And you know Christian. He's still got plans at $10. He was on last week's show. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. And check it out today, maplegrovepartners.com. You can send show feedback next week. I'll be reading some of that feedback first thing on the show. And so you can send that to me, jim@theaverageguy.tv, if you want to send those things in. A few of you have. Jim Shoemaker, Neil sent me an email. So if you guys want to send those in, I'll be reading those as well. Join the Discord group, theaverageguy.tv/Discord, if you want to join us there. And then go out right now. This is, as soon as I'm done, I want you to go out to hometech.fm. Listen to one episode if you haven't. Just grab one, the newest one, go listen to it, right? Then I want you to tell me that you really enjoyed it. And then you're going to write the Home Tech guys and tell me they enjoyed it because they just said they like feedback. So you owe it to them. Get it done. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. For those of you who joined us live, thanks for coming out. We may be doing a little bit of a post show. For everybody else, with that, we'll say goodbye.